flowers.
So hello, this is the interview for Roberson Project. We're collecting oral interviews as a way of collecting past students' history. I'm Keena Shea Pennycook. I'm a freshman here and I work at the Roberson Project. What's your name? What year did you graduate?
So I'm Sarah Nasacher and I graduated in 1985.
Okay. So you went to Suwannee 2 decades and a half ago, kind of. So that was definitely a time to be living.
Maybe 3 decades.
3 decades ago in Suwannee. So can you share like any story or maybe stories that stand out in your memory about like how you made your way at Suwannee?
Yeah, so my first memories of Suwannee are when I was a senior. My dad is an educator, and he was friends with Arthur Ben Chitty, who used to be the historian up here. And so they invite my dad to bring me and my brother up. My brother is like a year behind me. And they had a place for us to stay, and you know, they let the, I guess the dean's office know we were coming. So we got like, you know, the dean of the, I think the dean of women and the dean of the college and like the academic dean, because a lot of them already knew my dad because my dad was like an academic dean at an Episcopal school.
Yeah.
An Episcopal HBCU actually.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What
so,
school was that?
So that was Voorhees College.
Oh.
That's where, yeah, I was in South Carolina at that time.
Okay.
So Voorhees College. So that was my first memory, and I want to say we came in the spring, and the campus was beautiful, and I love the outdoors.
Yeah.
You know, it was like daffodils. I remember there's daffodils everywhere, and just everything was green. It's not quite green yet here because it's not really spring yet, but you know, that was a really good visit, and it ended up that I was choosing between here, the final two was Suwannee and MIT, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
And MIT, the students kept calling me on the phone. My parents, I don't think they could, at the time, like, they couldn't come up with the funds, maybe, for me to go up there to go visit. You know, that was back then, that was considered a long way away from home. I think my mom was not a fan of me going to Boston. And I was really tempted. It was a hard decision. What I really looked at was the ability of Suwannee to get me into medical school.
Yeah.
And they had convinced me pretty much. They were like, if you can get through the program, which is rigorous, you should be able to get in. So, you know, so then I remember coming as a freshman. You know, I was one of like maybe 4 or 5 students that were here that were black people. And the rest was just, you know, just all white, you know. And so, but it wasn't like really a culture shock to me because my dad had gone to graduate school in Oregon, like in the 70s, at Oregon State University. And we were one of 2 black families living there. And we had lived in Africa, and we had lived in the Southeast, and we had lived in Virginia. And in Virginia, all the time that I went to school, mostly there with white kids and black kids.
Yeah.
So
you had a good mixture growing.
Yeah, and a lot of military in Northern Virginia. I mean, not Northern Virginia, the coastal Virginia area. Yeah, so growing up, I was exposed to like a mix of cultures and kids, and so like it wasn't a huge culture shock. But I have to say, like I remember freshman year, to just sometimes like being lonely. Sometimes being lonely.
And so, despite the different experiences you had with the different, you know, people that you grew up with, it wasn't as easy as a transition, maybe, because you found yourself lonely at times. Did you find yourself, like, reaching out to the other Black students? Did you form maybe like a community, get involved in different things?
Yeah, we had a little small community, but I think the problem with four or five people is there's not enough diversity.
Yeah,
so, you know, and I have to say, like, I couldn't, like the kids that were here in that little small group, like we would get together and do some things together, but like we all had different majors.
Yeah.
So we were, you know, focusing on different things. I spent a lot of time studying, and I think the rest of them didn't spend as much time as I did studying. So I kind of had to like separate myself and just like when I was studying, study. And then like, you know, I was also in a band.
Yeah.
And I also had a work study.
Yeah.
And I worked outside.
Yeah.
You know, like, what is it, Apples Alley or something? There's like these areas that have trails.
Yeah.
And we would be outdoors like cleaning up the trails.
Okay. Yeah, so you were working like with facilities during that time.
Yeah. And then I also did like editing people's, some kind of books.
Yeah.
I don't remember who that was through. Mm-hmm. And then I did babysitting for one of the chemistry professors.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I did the babysitting jobs all the way until I graduated. I used to babysit the people that have like the pizza business. I'm trying to remember. Is it Four Seasons?
I'm not sure if that's still open up here.
It might be closed now, but it was outside the campus.
Yeah,
and I used to babysit their kids.
Okay, that's really interesting. I find a lot of Black students that I've like interviewed, our past alums had work study here, but they didn't quite work outside of the university. So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned earlier that like you thought the campus was beautiful when you came on. So like, what were your other first impressions of Sewanee? Like, I know you had connection to the
Episcopal Church.
Church. And so coming here.
I forgot to put that down on my sheet. So I was an acolyte. You know, I was already trained when I came. Mm-hmm. So I just fell in. You know, I met the chaplain and I just fell into that. I think I used to do the early services because most times if I did the early services, I could get out like in 45 minutes and go over and, you know, get my meal and then go study like the rest of the day. But yeah, so I was involved with the church quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And my first set of roommates, one of the girls was Episcopal and she used to like make the bread for the services.
Yeah.
So, you know, we used to kind of be hanging like, you know, when we were going to chapel or seeing each other, like waving or whatever. So there were people that were involved with the chapel services that I knew also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were well connected in different areas.
Yeah, and I mentioned the deans too.
Yeah.
And then like the academic dean when I was here was Patterson. And he's still living. And he and my dad were really good friends. Actually, I think maybe the first year I was here, my parents came up maybe for the parents weekend and they went over to the Pattersons for dinner. Like, I think every year I was here, they would go and like hang out with the Pattersons. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. So, and Dr. Chitty and his wife were here after I left. But they were elderly when I was here, but it was kind of like I had a family here, you know, cause I would see Dean Patterson, like when I was traveling across campus, he'd wave at me. And then, the chaplain knew me, I think, because I think if you're Black and you're Episcopal, you kind of stick out anyways. Who was the other one that I was going to mention? Patterson, the chaplain, the Chitties. So the Chitties, Elizabeth, his wife, they always looked out for me.
Yeah.
They would call me periodically, especially the first year I was here, just to see if I needed anything. They had a house that was close to the campus. And so she would be like, well, if you just want to come over, you know, just like spend a weekend or just hang out, like I have extra bedrooms. And it was just nice because it's like you have kind of like a family away from home. And then the Benjamins, you know, I think Benjamin was here. He might have just been getting started maybe the first year that I was here. But definitely, I remember second year and on, he was, you know, had an office. So there was somewhere you could go. I didn't really need that office so much, but I'll tell you, I broke my, this ankle, the left ankle. I think that was my sophomore year.
Did you play sports? Is it a sport?
So intramural.
Oh, okay, intramural.
So I did intramural track. And I did the long jump, and that's how I broke my ankle, landing in the pit. And it broke like three bones in the left ankle. So Mr. Benjamin took me down the mountain to go see the orthopedic surgeon. And then the orthopedic surgeon wanted me to be in the hospital because I had a full length cast all the way up to the hip. Because I decided, instead of getting hardware surgically inserted into the ankle, which would have either later had to be removed or I would still have hardware in there, I decided to get the full length cast because I talked to the orthopedic surgeon and I said, well, what are the options? And he was pushing for the surgery. But I said, well, what's the other choice? What if I don't get the, and he said, well, you'll have a cast for 3 months. And I was like, I mean, back then, that seemed reasonable to me.
It was very reasonable, especially considering the price that you would have to pay for the surgery, the recovery time that would have gone into that. It was very, it was an easy option.
Yeah, and I remember him showing me the x-rays because I was asking to see the x-rays, and he was like showing me where the fractures were, and I was like, I could actually see the fractures. So, yeah, I give myself credit for making, I thought I made a smart decision. Maybe some other people wouldn't think so, but I thought I made a smart decision. So I was in the hospital for a week because they had to make sure, and I had a vented cast, which means it had cracks from here down on the sides. So the nurses had to watch and make sure that my leg was not swelling up and then I could still have feeling in the foot because that's like a risk. And they didn't want me to get up like for a couple of days, but I snuck and got up in the middle of the night just to go to the bathroom. But, so, and that was the hospital that was here on campus too, which was an interesting experience. So I got that experience too. So, but yeah, so that was a positive experience, and I really appreciated, you know, Mr. Benjamin going out of his way to make sure that I was going to be okay. And yeah, because my parents at that time were in, were they? I think they were in Nashville. So they did come up the following, because I think I was in there a whole week. So they came on the weekend and came and saw me. And everything was fine by the time they came. It was, you know, everything was fine anyways. It was just that they were concerned because I was in the hospital.
For some time. And I have had the chance to meet Chidi's daughter, I believe. She was helping Roberson work, going through some documents and so
forth. Because he was a historian.
Was an historian. So it was impressive. Like, you mentioned those names, and I had connections to those ones. So that was your first impression of Suwanee, and you had broken leg for some time, but you did spend a lot of time studying, and that's because you were going into the medical field. Are you still in the medical field now?
Yeah.
So did Suwanee did work out in helping you get where you needed to go.
But there was a challenge there. I don't know if you're gonna ask about that.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about like the challenges that you had. You were always studying, you were alone. Like, there was a social challenge, obviously, but what about academically here?
Yeah, so the academic challenge, and this is if you, like, this is still going on. And I don't know, I heard that Dr. Renee talked about yesterday about the health disparities and, you know, the lack of black doctors in the United States. This actually gotten worse now than it was in the 70s. And So when I was here, like usually when you declare a major and you're in the major, or even like white students in general, it just is just like everywhere. Because this was also happening to me when I was in residency. This is just like, if you go somewhere where there's not that many black students, there are not people to like share like notes and pass exams and that kind of thing with. So like I was on my own. I was literally like, I believe the first one, I don't know. I don't know if there was another person that went to medical school before me at Swanee, but I was the only one in the science building when I came, like the only one. So like people were nice to me in biology, and Dr. Prune was my advisor. But I would say, because I was talking to Dr. Renee about this a couple of weeks ago, I would say that I was kind of like the guinea pig, or like there was really nobody to give me guidance about how to navigate. So I was relying on just like my skills and navigation through life up to that point, which thankfully, you know, my parents had instilled, and we had lived like a number of places and moved a lot because my dad's in academics. So I had to learn how to navigate socially, you know, so I make friends pretty quickly, like I can fit in and everything. But I knew that I would just have to learn how to do stuff on my own. And so like I had like very little, if any, materials like other students had in my major. Like they would have pass exams. I didn't even know they existed until like maybe my third year, because I had nothing. So I'm just taking the exams just from what I know. But I was still doing well. But then like I saved all my stuff. I saved it all and passed it on to the next black students that were in the science, you know, building, so that they would at least have the benefit of what I had gathered.
So that's actually really helpful, especially you're looking out for generations like coming in after you. You didn't have those resources, but then eventually black students here did have those resources because you were able to provide that for them. And then they did the same carrying on going forward, like passing the torch almost, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's really commendable that you would do something like that. I must like commend you for that. Looking out for your community. You didn't have as much of a community while you were here. You did have people you cared for, people you'd hang out with occasionally here and there.
But
I feel as though from your college experience, it's something that you missed, like
community. Yeah, I didn't have that. Because another thing is like also like having some knowledge of the personality of the professors.
Yes.
Now, you know, all academics want to think that they're not racist. And I've been in academics myself, so I know this is true. But you do have people that have biases. And they are racist, but they don't realize that they're racist. And that's why I call myself the guinea pig, because my advisor was white. So like when I was telling her things that I saw happening, then she, you know, I don't think that she knew amongst her colleagues who might be racist. I think she may have been learning some of that from me, because like I'm telling her like, you know, I'm doing everything this guy's asking. Then when we study for the exam, it's not coming out. You know, I'm not getting the grades that I'm expecting to get. But then I find out that he's spending time, extra time with these students, and they're not telling me. You know what I'm saying?
So
there's obvious stuff. There were certain professors, like, because when Renee came behind me and there were some other folks that came behind me, like, I remember having discussions with them, like, take a class from this person, not this person. Because I was seeing the biases, and I'm like, your grades will be better if you stick to these people, you know? And it shouldn't be like that, but it always is in academics.
It usually is like that. So when there was a time when you had to pick your own advisor, do you think those factors like heavily made you consider like who you'd choose to be your advisor? Maybe it wasn't someone that was the best for you progressing academically forward, but someone who could understand you or try to understand you.
Yeah, I mean, I did the best I could under the circumstances.
Yeah.
And you know, what I know is that the person that was my advisor had gotten a lot of people into medical school, and mm-hmm. she had relationships with like the state, you know, different medical schools within mm-hmm. the state, and even like I think North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So, and was doing research like off campus from here, doing like biomedical research. So, you know, I felt this person, and had been, was pretty well traveled, mm-hmm. this person too. So, you know, I think she had a lot of positive aspects. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I started realizing more recently as I've gotten older that, you know, if, well, I realized this a while ago, like, especially when the Dunns came. When Dr. Dunn came, mm-hmm. And he was, you know, in political science, and things started improving as soon as you get like people of color like on faculty.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Even if they're not in the department.
Yeah,
and as soon as you have more students, mm-hmm. that improves the situation. So you need to try to get more.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that definitely is the case, and I just had an interview with some people who, like, Professor Roberson was like an integral part in their success, because having someone who looks like you, who understands you, who knows where you're coming from, they're going to look out for you, and it's
correct.
Like a comforting feeling.
Correct.
And so even though you didn't have that, you were able to provide that.
Well, we had some. Well, it's like at least I had a female.
Yeah.
And at least we had Mr. Benjamin here.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
so there was something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To grab onto.
To grab onto.
Yeah. And so do you think there are any other stories that you'd like to share about Suwanee, like this?
Yeah, I forgot to mention that I think that part of my happiness, a big part of my happiness here was, I think in sophomore year, mm-hmm. I started... with the training staff, the athletic training staff. And the trainer that was here, one of my friends, who was a white girl, she started working with them first. And I'm trying to remember how I even met her, probably in some science class. But she told me what she was doing, and I was like, that sounds, you know, that sounds like fun. And I was like, well, what teams? And mm-hmm. she was like, oh, it's multiple teams. Mm-hmm. And then, so then I went and talked to the trainer, and he was like, yeah, you know, I'll have you working, her name was Jenny. I'll have you working with Jenny on football, and then we'll see what other sports you want to do, you know? And so I was out there baseball, swimming, basketball. So we'd be on the sidelines, you know, taking care of injuries, learn how to tape ankles, learn how to, you know, in the training facility, like they had Whirlpool, they had different physical therapy modalities.
Yeah.
So I don't know why I didn't think about that, like when I went to my first residency.
Yeah.
Because I think I was thinking more intellectually, like what's intellectually challenging. My first residency was internal medicine, but then my second residency was physical medicine and rehab, which fits with what I was doing here, like sports medicine. Yeah.
Okay. So when you got the injury, that it was like right at the time when you were finding out what you were interested in, you were like, actually, isn't this ironic? So that was that's really good. And what about like your living situation here? So and the medical program here. So I don't know what it was called at the time, but now they still call that, they call it the Hippocrates Fellowship. Students apply for it and go through like this rigorous program.
It was like the beginnings of it then, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think they had a name for it.
Yeah.
But it was just pre-med, I guess, or pre-med's not really a thing, but
no.
Yeah, you were understood to be on the medical track.
And how do you feel about your decision choosing Sewanee in the end? Because it was between Sewanee and MIT. I feel like I have to go back and ask that question. Like, after everything you experienced, the different stories you
and
had
my,
here.
And my younger brother next in line behind me ended up going to MIT.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
and I learned that my mother was really had this fear because I had skipped one grade in high school. He had skipped two grades. Mm-hmm. So he was 16 when he went to MIT. And I remember talking to my parents and like talking them into, my dad was okay with it, but it was my mother.
Yeah.
Like talking them into allowing him to go to MIT. And it just happened that like we had relatives that had moved up there by then in Massachusetts. They were not in Boston, but they were like an hour out.
Yeah.
By train, so I think she felt more comfortable that her sister was up in Massachusetts. But when I was going, nobody was there.
Yeah,
but it would have been all right. Yeah. I would have been fine. But I see now that really wasn't meant for me. Mm-hmm. When I went to go visit my brother when he was at MIT, when I was here, when I went to see the campus, I was like, it was cool, but a much higher like nerd factor, and tons of Asian students, and just like the black students that I met there. I don't think that would have been my happiest, you know. And here, I love the outdoors. So I used to be out hiking and enjoying the outdoors. I love the classes outdoors here, even English class outside. Even this time of year, if it wasn't wet, you know, we'd be outside. So I really enjoy that.
That aspect of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no regrets when choosing Sewanee.
No. And they got me into medical school.
Yeah.
And what I was going to say, something about the challenge about getting into medical school from Sewanee, which had numerous talks with people that are professors here, like in the science building, like after I graduated. I was here on the regular board like some years ago, for a while. I don't remember how many years it was, but it was at least four. I want to say six, maybe.
Yeah.
Whatever the standard. So I talked to a lot of them then. And the problem was Sewanee had this reputation for like grading people down, like really rigorous grading. Like, I mean, basically kind of the rigor that my brother went through at MIT, kind of the same kind of rigor, but in a different way here at Sewanee. To me, it was almost, because at least at MIT, my brother was accustomed to taking multi-choice exams, whereas here, when I transitioned to medical school, I had to get used to
the multi-choice,
not the essays.
Because Sewanee is like English.
It's liberal arts.
Yeah, literary.
To the hilt.
Yeah, so everyone learns how to write.
Right, so in the science building, we're writing essays on the test.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is when you go out of Sewanee, you got to take multi-choice.
They just want you to know the answer.
They want you to know the answer.
Yeah, and
here
you learn to explain and do this.
Right. So. Which is good for life, but for science, it's kind of hard. Science and math. So you know, I had many discussions, and they had heard it from other people too. You know, it's not that we regretted it, but it's like, you got to have some balance so that like when people take the MCATs, they do well. And so that because schools within Tennessee or within the Southeast that know Sewanee knew that our grades were a little bit slightly lower. But then schools further out, like in say like up in the East Coast, they don't know, you know, they don't really know Sewanee. Unless they had a student that came that had like a 4.0, which is rare in the science building. So hopefully it's not rare anymore, but back then it was kind of rare.
And you talked about different people like outside the community or even the historian Ben Chitty who worked here, who helped you like at Sewanee. But if you could attribute your experience here at Sewanee, like who would you say made a difference in your life here at Sewanee? like maybe alter the direction, made it worse, made it better in any way?
I would say I would give my advisor credit, Dr. Kroon. I would give Mr. Benjamin, I'm calling him a doctor, and his wife. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would give them credit. His wife is awesome. The Chitties, because they were kind of like my grandparents away from home. Mm-hmm. The thing is like I knew all the deans too, but I didn't really see them much because I guess because I stayed out of trouble.
And, yeah.
You know, I wasn't getting in trouble. So, you know, I would wave at them or they knew who I was. But, and then I would say the students, you know, because Renee and I are still like besties from, she came, I think she was a freshman when I was leaving.
Yeah.
Kevin Jones, I don't know if you guys know those guys. They were on the football team, Reggie and Kevin, some of the first black guys that I knew. You know, I think there were people in the 70s that were on the football team, but they, like in our era, I think there was a gap.
Between that time.
Yes.
And I have had the chance to look at those records by Ben Chitty during that time, accounting for like the black students. Mm-hmm. During that time. So I think in the 70s, it was like 12 or so black students, but right when it got to the 80s, it dropped like tremendously, like 7 or like 6 during that entire decade.
Right.
So, yeah
was,
like,
I was in there.
A gap.
Yeah. And so, of course, I was hanging out with all the sports folks because I was a trainer, and Marshall, I don't know if you knew Marshall, he was one of the deans here. More recently, but he played basketball. There was Kevin Jones and Reggie. They played football, and then there were many others after them. But you know, like we were all kind of like a family because like me and Jenny, the white girl I was talking about, we were invited to like the football team and the basketball team.
Yeah.
We sat at their tables in the cafeteria.
Yeah.
So, and it was interesting because I would say there were white people that were jealous, but there were also black people that were jealous.
Yeah. You were being invited to the sports table. Even I know, like, I'm not allowed to sit there unless someone's like, oh, yeah, you can
yeah,
come over.
Yeah, and there wasn't no understory. Like, we were not sleeping with the you know, the football players. And Renee used to hang with me sometimes when she got here. But, yeah, there was no hanky-panky stuff going on. It was just mutual respect.
And looking out for each other.
Correct.
Hanging out with each other. Just friendship.
Correct.
And that's good that you had that during that time. So
you can attribute that was my family. Especially my junior, senior
year.
That was it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that concludes our interview.
Okay.
Done with the questions, but if there's anything else that you'd like to share before we close, any shout outs you'd like to give at the end of this?
I need to give a shout out to the Benjamins. I hope I see them while I'm here. I haven't been up here in like a while. And Dr. Renee, you know, we talk a lot, so I just saw her, you know, she was the one that told me to come back and talk to you guys, so.
And maybe talk about the business that you spoke about earlier. Just showing it out there.
My private practice?
Yes,
the
private practice.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I have a holistic medicine practice, and I practice mostly virtually now. But I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. Sometimes I see people in person, but it's more like just at the beginning of when they start with me. I help people to improve, like, you know, whatever kind of wellness or health goals that they have. But I would say most people have the goal of trying to avoid surgery or get off medications or to, like, reverse or resolve, like, diabetes or arthritis or a lot of menopausal women have issues, health issues related to menopause. So I help a lot of people with that. me and my friend Sansa, who's a naturopathic doctor in Atlanta, we just started a weight loss, actually a weight liberation program called BU to the Fullness. And we're gearing it towards women of color. We take everybody, but the marketing is specifically geared towards women of color. And we're trying to address like some of the health disparities with obesity and overweight without focusing on weight loss per se, but focusing on improving the health. Like
in totality,
you know, people may have, a lot of people have insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, their body fat is too high. So that's what we're addressing.
And we find, especially like in the Black community, those illnesses are very similar, partially because of like where we live and the food that we cook or raise. And so it's very important that you're giving back to your community in this way. You're looking out for, of course it's for everyone, but still targeted demographic towards Black women. And
yeah,
Black
we make it fun. And we have it gamified, which is kind of interesting because we're using a continuous glucose monitor, which they've become more popular. Like you see people with them on their arm. There's also a metabolism device called the Lumen that not so many people are familiar with, or if they get it, they don't know how to use it. So we have a special relationship with Lumen where we are, we have like a back end where we're able to analyze the data. So we're able to look at the data and tell a person, okay, you may be eating too late in the day. And you would be burning more fat if you stop eating at this time. Or you may not be moving your body enough. We don't like to say exercise, but movement. To get your blood sugar, your average blood sugar to come down. So there are some things that you can do that if you have knowledge of what your metabolism is doing, you can do a better job with it.
Taking care of yourself and your body. That's so interesting.
So it's gamified because the device, like you have to breathe into the device. The device measures your exhaled carbon dioxide and it gives you a rating from 1 to 5. If you get a 1 or a 2, it means that you're in fat burning. If you get a 3 to a 5, it means that you're carb burning. You actually need to do both. However, in the morning when you first wake up, it's best if you've been fasting all night, so you should be in fat burning.
I've actually never heard of them. That's very interesting. And it's really impressive what you've done with your degree here from Sewanee, helping you get into medical school. And then this is that's a track you decided to focus on. And it's helped you connect with so much more Black people. I've like assumed, especially working in Atlanta, Georgia, you've connected to the students, like students afterwards. You're still friends with students here. So thank you so much for sitting down.
Thank you. You're an excellent interviewer.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much, Serena, for doing.